What do you think about your public library? In Urbana, some people are mad at their library director over her approach to the weeding out of older books in order to make room for new equipment. In Champaign, the public library faced a possible cutback in hours, avoided only when the Champaign City Council approved a sales tax hike. In Decatur, a funding shortfall is forcing the library there to plan for its second round of cutbacks in 3 years. All this at a time when librarians are trying to figure out how digital technology is changing the size, the scope, and the necessity of their services. Today on Focus, we're going to dig into the debate over libraries and try to get hold of the larger questions involved. My guests are two library science professors from the University of Illinois, Carol Tilley and Catherine Labar, and your comments about libraries are welcome. I'm Jim Meadows. Focus goes to the library right after this hour's news. Welcome to Focus. I'm Jim Meadows. In 2010, the American Library Association asked two candidates for their presidency to name the two biggest challenges facing public libraries, and the two candidates each had the same answers: funding and adjusting the changes in technology. And those two issues will be a big part of our discussion today about public libraries. My guests are both professors in the University of Illinois' Department of Library Sciences. That's not the full name of it, is it? But Carol Tilley and Catherine Labar, welcome to the program. What is the full name of the department?
It's the Graduate School of Library and Information Science.
Okay. And I understand it's really one of the most well-regarded library science departments in the country.
It's the top-ranked program in the United States.
Well, one thing that's been on a lot of people's minds over the last week and a half, has been the controversy over book culling at the Urbana Free Library, in which the dispute is between really the library director and some of her staff and some members of the public on whether the practice of book culling, which is done at libraries, was done too aggressively and too recklessly in this particular case. And I'm wondering if somewhere underneath all of this controversy, there's a fundamental disagreement over what public libraries are for. And can anyone outline the main points of this disagreement?
Well, if we take a look at sort of what's in contention with regards to Urbana Free Library, there was aggressive weeding. Early estimates suggest that perhaps 35% of the nonfiction ranges that were weeded, which would have been sort of generalities up through the 700s, the arts books, were removed.
That's 700s of the Dewey Decimal System for
Correct.
People who don't follow
Correct.
This closely.
Correct. So this would include the sciences, social sciences, religion, philosophy, psychology, engineering, gardening, horticulture, those kinds of materials.
Everything but literature and history.
Yes, exactly. That about 35% of that collection was removed. And I don't think that anyone is disagreeing that weeding is a good thing or that weeding needed to happen, but I think it's the rate at which it happened, both in terms of the number of volumes and also the speed at which it happened, in that most of this weeding occurred over a weekend rather than a longer period of time, such as several months.
Well, whether or not this practice was the wisest one, was it? Do you think it was done with the library director's intent towards a certain vision of what a public library should look like?
Yeah, my sense is that the director was responding to a lot of reconnaissance that happened as part of a strategic planning process that involved a consultant, Sandra Nelson, a community planning committee of 16 members of the community, with consultation with the board. And what seems to be driving some of this change is consideration of increasing the amount of space in the public library.
The amount of space
available for patrons.
We're not talking about enlarging the library, but changing the footprint of the libraries towards that less of it is used for, say, bookshelves, and more of it is used for activities?
Yes, absolutely. I think Urbana is in a situation where they did have an expansion of the library that started in 2002. They're trying to work with the existing physical plant of the building. There seems to be some movement, although very little communication about the actual plans for the space, but just a continual communication about the fact that more space is needed, and that means that space that's given to books currently needs to go.
Well, you know, I actually have Sandra Nelson's website here at sandranelson.com. And I'm trying to, I don't see anything that's really, well, it does talk about strategic planning. It talks about changing times. But I don't really get a clear picture here as to what the change that they're looking at. Well, when I see phrases like identify essential activities and eliminate and streamline, I guess that may point towards a certain direction. But what direction is that?
Well, for strategic planning with regard to public libraries, I think there is an important need to engage in strategic planning regularly. I think what we've seen happen at Urbana Free and the direction that they're moving to is both the increase in public space, both for informal gathering and for meetings and other kinds of more formalized activities and programs, but also a shift away from a physical collection, both in terms of books and physical DVDs and CDs and even physical periodicals, towards a move online, towards downloadable books, downloadable music, downloadable and streaming films and magazines. So that seems to be the direction that Urbana Free Library was headed in.
And really greater automation.
Right.
So
and greater
self-checkout,
automation.
Self-checkout lanes,
for example. Which is already the case at the Champaign Public Library.
Correct. Yes.
Before we go any further, I should note that we welcome your comments and questions on this subject and any questions you have about public libraries today. Give us a call. Our phone number is 333-9455, 333-WILL. If you're outside the Champaign-Urbana area, call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. That's 800-222-WILL. And you can email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, will-talk@illinois.edu. And we welcome your questions on Facebook and Twitter, at Focus 580. And, you know, we already got a call. And I believe this is David in Carroll Stream. Good morning, David. You're on Focus.
Hi. I'm actually an Urbana resident. And my question is about the criteria that they used for weeding, that the director used for weeding, and who did the weeding. I mean, that seems to be the real problem. And actually, there was a criterion, as I understand it, and it was materials had to be newer than 10 years old, and that it was actually shelvers that took the books and boxed them up, and that librarians had to really push for input, and then they were given a couple of hours to look at this enormous list. And so input was not asked for, and in addition, the director waited until probably the only person in the library that could have resisted this draconian method, the director of adult services, was out of town. So I don't think there's anything wrong with weeding collections. I think it's a necessary thing, and there's not necessarily anything wrong with freeing up space, although there's a lot of public space available in the Twin Cities, and the need wasn't really that great, in my opinion. But it's the draconian methods that were used.
Care to weigh in on that?
Sure. So from what we have learned through comments from adult services staff and news reports in various local publications, and also from looking at the shelf list, which would be the list of all of the items that were considered for weeding, as well as the list of weeded items that were obtained via a Freedom of Information Act request, it does indeed seem that the date of publication was the primary criterion for whether or not a book should be considered for weeding. So anything that was published prior to 2003 was automatically considered a candidate. It is what we understand from statements made by several members of the adult services staff that they were given very little time to examine these shelf lists to consider what to keep and what to discard, that they were encouraged perhaps to only work from the spreadsheets and not to physically examine the items, that there were temporary employees hired to remove the books as determined on the spreadsheets. So age was a primary criterion, and it does seem that librarians did try to save some highly used and classic works from that collection, but it also looks like a majority of items weeded have circulated recently and are still in use, not all of them.
Yeah, and I just wanted to add, the original spreadsheet for the candidates for weeding did indicate circulation data. So it was possible to sort both by age and by the amount of times an item had circulated. But these were the only two criteria that appear on the spreadsheet.
And are we talking about spreadsheets which were released through a FOIA request?
Correct.
And I believe you can find them at the online publication Smile Politely. That's smilepolitely.com.
Yes. And we were also given a second set of spreadsheets that were actually given to the shelvers. These were the items that were slated for weeding. So shelvers did remove the items from the shelves, put them on carts, take them down to circulation. The circulation staff was asked to deaccession them, and they were the ones who boxed the books to send them out.
Okay. David, I thank you very much for the call. I'm reluctant to get into a debate over the particular rightness and wrongness of what the Urbana Free Library Director did, because I don't have the parties
sure
here. I should note that what the Board of Trustees announced last week that they would do is that first they've halted all weeding activities and halted all shipping of materials off premises, and they have reopened their strategic planning process, which I gather was already maybe a point of controversy in this larger debate we were talking about as to, you know, what a library should be these days. And so they're going to look at that again, and at the same time they're looking at the feasibility, or rather they're ordering their library director, Deborah Lizak, to explore the feasibility of televising future library board meetings. And they'll have results of that at the library board's next regular meeting, which I believe is in a couple of weeks, July 9th.
Yes. There's also, there aren't any details the last time I looked, but yesterday a special meeting of the Board of Trustees appeared on the library's calendar of events, and it's scheduled for next Tuesday, July 2nd at 6:30 p.m.
in the auditorium.
Okay. Well, let's take a second call, and this is Jerry from Urbana, who also I believe you're on the air on Focus. You had a question about the Urbana Free Library policy.
Why is there no official number from the board or the staff as to how many books were sent away?
Okay, thank you, Jerry. And, of course, I don't know, but you gave a number, didn't you, just a few minutes ago?
I did give some numbers, and there have been no official announcements from the board or the staff on the number of items weeded, which for many people is distressing because they have the spreadsheets. They can see what items were removed, and in theory, they should be able to calculate that quite easily. I've been working with some people to calculate numbers off the spreadsheets we obtained via the Freedom of Information Act requests, the FOIA requests. So those are the numbers that I'm providing, the ones that we've estimated.
Can you repeat those numbers?
So the overall call rate for the nonfiction materials that were affected was about 35%.
So it's about essentially the third of the nonfiction books, not including literature and history,
right,
were removed.
Yes.
Now, how much of those actually went out the door before the library board essentially put a moratorium on the whole process?
We think all of them went out.
Yeah. Our understanding is everything that was pulled went out the door. 120 cartons are being returned from the last range that was pulled
before the company that they will work with.
And so what percentage is being returned of the ones that were shipped out?
That's something that we don't know yet. I haven't had a chance to do some rough calculations. I can tell you that in terms of raw numbers, we are estimating between 9.5 and 10,000 books were removed from the nonfiction collection.
And I think it's important to tell you why we can't give you exact figures ourselves. These spreadsheets were converted to PDF format, and so we have spent almost a week extracting those and making them back into sortable spreadsheets. Some of the work has to be done by hand.
Okay.
Well, shouldn't there be invoices, like boxes shipped? Just shipping data?
There should be.
We have no access to that.
Bizarre.
Jerry, thank you very much for your call. And I just wanted to make clear, because you're talking about getting access to these documents through FOIA requests. These are documents which are showing up at smilepolitely.com. Who's we when you say that you're doing this?
So there's a group of folks, J.P. Gogan, who sort of brought this story to light, has been working, I think, to coordinate efforts. But there are dozens of us within the Urbana Free community and within the library community and beyond who are interested in this issue and are working to make information more widely available.
We're looking at, you know, whether this culling was done well or whether it could have been done better. It was done with a certain goal in mind of a different-looking library. And I can only assume that the supporters of this change feel that it's urgently needed, and that there really are issues facing libraries today. Catherine and Carol, do you feel that is the case?
Yeah, I think as I teach my students, I tend to try to put the most current information in their hands about what's happening within libraries. And I often send them to the Pew Internet and American Life Project. They continually are doing surveys of the American population to get a sense of, for example, what are the state of library services in the digital age. That's a review that was done in January. Another recent review that was released was about younger Americans' library habits, expectations. And what we're finding is, you know, a clear tension between the understanding of what a library should be, what kinds of services a library should provide, but also a very clear understanding and desire on the part of the American public. For example, 80% of the people who were surveyed in January from ages 16 and up said that they want to borrow books. 80% rate reference librarians as a very important library service. 77% want free access to internet. So there are clear changes that are happening within the library world, but there also is a very strong tradition and expectation of, you know, personal service, access to books, things that we think of as traditional library missions.
And I think looking at the response to this book culling incident at the Urbana Free Library, and I should note that, you know, we put news articles up on our website, will.illinois.edu. There are opportunities to comment. We don't normally get comments on most stories. We got a lot of comments on this story, and I think everybody who covered this story, from Small Politely to the News Gazette, got a lot of comments on their websites on this story. This is one when that one that really seems to concern a lot of people, or at least a certain constituency of the library. But perhaps there are people in the library profession who fear that they're failing to engage another constituency. Is that the case?
Well, I think that there is, as Catherine mentioned, a continual tension between old and new, between older patrons, younger patrons, older librarians, and younger librarians. It certainly is true that many people in the U.S. still want to go to libraries for traditional reasons, to borrow books, to browse books, to consult with reference librarians. A growing but still fairly low number of people also want access to streaming and digital media. I think that there are questions about that a lot of public libraries are facing, which is how do we allocate our resources? Resources are scarce. So how do we decide what portion of our budget to put into traditional print materials? What do we put into digital and downloadable materials? And it's a tough decision. And we have to recognize that even people who are very wired, who are early adopters in terms of technology, don't necessarily want access to digital and streaming information from their public libraries. A lot of people still want to go in and put their hands on physical materials.
This also raises a question of what you go to a library for, not just in terms of format, but content. We were talking before we went on the air about how you could find commercial lending libraries, say, earlier in the 20th century, and especially in the days before the rise of the paperback book. That's where you would find, like, the current bestsellers. And there was a time when public libraries would not be so interested in the current bestsellers, but now I believe they are. And that seems to be a real change, I think, in the last, say, half century as far as what public libraries do.
Yeah, and I think you're making me think of the hybrid models that public libraries today engage with. So, for example, if you go to Champaign Public Library, you're really interested in one of the top 10 best-selling books on the New York Times list of books, you may be asked to pay a small amount of rental fees in order to...
For the really hot books.
For the really, really hot books, yes. To make so libraries are exploring ways to provide sufficient mm-hmm. copies, but asking mm-hmm. patrons to pay fees
and
as well.
That's not exactly brand new. I mean, I can go back 20 or 30 years and see something like that.
Absolutely. There's nothing terribly new about it, but I think we're seeing that sort of moving throughout the library community in ways that were not as pervasive before.
Well, the alternative for being the home for the most current popular materials is having knowledge for the ages. And perhaps that was the traditional, I'm thinking of Mary and the Librarian and the Music Man for some reason. And that sort of picture of the library, that actually goes into a question we have emailed into us from Mary. And she's reacting if you read the materials on smilepolitely.com and the accounts that staff members gave of the directions they understood were coming from the library director, I think there was a reference to that libraries today are moving away from having lifelong learning as something that is a goal there. And she asks, what does it mean when part of the Urbana Free Library strategic plan is a move away from lifelong learning? As a lifelong learner, that concerns me. I assume that was behind so much nonfiction disappearing.
I think that is definitely an issue at play at Urbana Free with regard to the weeding, and I think it's an important reason why the Board of Trustees has recognized the need to reopen the strategic planning process. In my mind and in my practice, what I advise students is that they need to hear, they need to seek input from as much of their constituency as possible. And the way the strategic planning process was carried out at Urbana Free, to the best of my understanding, is that it was primarily directed by a group of 16 representatives of local agencies, that there was less input from patrons, there was less input from the general public. And that this strategic planning process also involved forced choice decision making. So it wasn't necessarily that people didn't value lifelong learning who took part in the strategic planning process. It was that other choices
they were essentially working from a list of 18 choices.
Was this something that was consultant driven? We were talking about the consultant Sandra Nelson, and I should note if you go to the Sandra Nelson's website, she gives a list of libraries she's worked with. The Urbana Free Library is one of them.
Yes. So it was. It does appear to be consultant driven. Sandra Nelson is co-author of the most recent manual from the Public Library Association on service priorities for public libraries, and that's a widely recognized manual that helps guide public library strategic planning, helps them define what they're about. Those are the 18 service priorities that the representatives on the strategic plan committee were working from. And I can't speak to why lifelong learning fell off of the final plan for Urbana Free. I think that many libraries still strongly value lifelong learning, but I do think that it is part of the reason we see the move that happened with the weeding in nonfiction.
Is there an idea that, maybe you have the internet for that sort of reference information?
I've heard people say that. I know that as Urbana Free, for example, engaged in a participatory experiment to decide to figure out how can we provide more internet access, how can we still maintain the community of computing users, people who come to the library to use the computing equipment that's there. This was led by Martin Wolski. He's another one of my colleagues at the Graduate School of Library and Information Science. And it was a much slower process, but my sense was the idea behind this kind of a move was not because this computing equipment supplants the traditional resources at the library. It was a move to provide greater internet access. And as a result, though, the non-circulating reference collection was moved into the nonfiction stack. So those materials were still available for consultation. But
if they're moved in the nonfiction stacks, do they become available for checkout?
Yes.
My sense was, although many of them were multi-volume sets.
And would they be available for culling in future years along the same way? Well, of course, reference books get culled too.
Yes.
But would they be treated in a different way than they were before?
We have reports that the reference collection was culled along with the other materials.
Interesting change. We are about halfway through our program, so we're going to take a short break here on Focus, and then we will come back with more discussion of the challenges facing public libraries, controversies going on now, and the underlying questions that fuel those controversies. This is Focus on WILL. I'm Jim Meadows. We're back on Focus with University of Illinois Library Science professors Catherine Labar and Carol Tilley, and we are discussing the challenges facing public libraries and some of the immediate controversies. We've been talking about the big controversy at the Urbana Free Library over the culling of books and what that says about maybe conflicting visions of what libraries need to be in the future. But we're also going to talk about some other issues facing public libraries, not totally disconnected. We welcome your calls and we welcome your emails at 333-9455. Or call us toll-free at 1-800-222-9455. Email address will-talk@illinois.edu. Phone number again, 333-WILL. Toll-free, 1-800-222-WILL. We had an email coming in asking if the previous Urbana Free Library Director, Fred Schlipp, has weighed in on any of the recent events at the Urbana Free Library. And you were just telling me that despite being asked, he has not.
Well, I don't know that he's been asked officially, but he has not also either gone on the record.
If we're talking about, conflicting visions of libraries in the future, is there a fear? Is this fueled in part by a fear that libraries could be endangered, that public libraries as an institution could be endangered? And I really think about this when I look at some of the funding problems we see, and we'll talk about that in just a bit in Champaign and Decatur, the libraries there.
Yeah, I think that the disruptions caused by the recession prompted another wave of fear about what would happen with libraries as funding declined, as tax initiatives were voted down. But I do think that, what we always say in the classroom is, what are people doing? And what we've witnessed throughout this time is that people are using the library as much, if not more, than they ever have. Looking for jobs, looking for entertainment, DVDs, CDs, checking out books. And so, we can say on the one hand that the funding situation has always been difficult for public libraries, but people continue to use and continue to use at an increasing rate the services that they provide.
Are libraries more expensive now, not just due to inflation, but to do the things that are now expected of libraries? Does that just cost more than what was expected of a library in the 1950s, for instance?
Well, I don't know that in terms of the services that libraries provide, that it's more expensive. But it is true that running a library is an expensive endeavor. People are expensive. Materials are extraordinarily expensive. They have been increasing in average price at a rate higher than inflation over the past couple of decades. Electronic materials, digital materials, technologies continue to increase in price. And one of the issues that keeps coming up as more libraries are moving towards electronic materials, such as downloadable e-books, is that these materials require license fees. The library doesn't purchase these materials outright. These are objects that the library continues to pay either per use or annual licensing fees to make available to patrons. And so the models for how we provide materials to people in a public library continue to change as well.
Okay, and that just makes things more expensive.
It does, all and the way around.
We should look at a couple of recent examples in Champaign, where they just built a new library building, which seems to have worked out quite well in terms of the traffic I see there. Library directors announced that they were facing a funding shortfall, and they said that they didn't get more money. They would have to cut back on services, and they proposed, among other things, eliminating evening hours for the library. What happened was that the Champaign City Council approved a sales tax increase, not just for the library, but also to avoid cutbacks at the police and fire departments as well. At the same time, over at the city of Decatur, west of Champaign, they're also looking at similar funding cutbacks. And apparently they are not considering a tax hike there. So they are looking at real cutbacks. And for them, it would be the second round of cutbacks in 3 years. And is this something that we see a lot more now than we saw, say, a generation ago at public libraries?
I don't know if it's something that we see more of now compared to, say, 20 years ago. Certainly within public library funding surveys, there was a significant hit to public libraries with the recession of 2008, and libraries are beginning to sort of climb back out of that, but they're not out of the woods yet by any stretch of the imagination. There are many libraries that are still at 0% funding increases or negative funding changes. So I think it's a fact that library funding has always been precarious.
Yeah, I think you could actually describe it as cyclical. I think, as the economy waxes and wanes in the United States, you see funding waxing and waning for libraries. There's sometimes a bit of a delay. So as the economy declines, then the funding declines. As the economy, rebounds, then the funding for libraries rebounds, but it's more slowly than you might expect.
But I think, too, though, I just want to say very quickly that, as Catherine mentioned a few minutes ago, that even as maybe revenue streams for libraries decrease or library budgets decrease, the demand for library services and library materials as a whole increases. So it's libraries are actually having to do more with less.
And when we say the demand for materials and services increases, is there an increased interest in traditional library services, as well as in things like digital services, et cetera?
Absolutely. If we look to the Pew studies, they're indicating that 80% of the people they interviewed want to check books out. They want to work with reference librarians. They want access to internet, which is, something that we've been seeing developing as a library service since the 80s. We do also note that, we're seeing more of a drive to create partnerships with businesses, partnerships with schools, sort of as a way to jump across the funding gaps that libraries are experiencing. So it isn't just that they need to draw on the revenue streams that come through the cities or the counties, but also to think of ways to broaden their funding base and also their collaboration.
If you think about what the recession has done to family finances, you'll know that a lot of people have lost their cushion of disposable income. So going out to the movies or buying a new book that they're interested in reading is less easy, less affordable. And so the library becomes an organization that can better supply those needs. And those are people who were already using the library, but they're turning to the library at a greater rate now to help with these other information and entertainment needs.
Are we seeing an increase of people who are using the library who did not before?
I think this has always been something that libraries have struggled with. And part of the strategic planning processes that I've been witnessing at libraries across the United States tend to indicate continued importance of outreach, whether through expanding their services for seniors who are trying to navigate the healthcare scenario that we have in the United States, whether we are trying to focus on early literacy projects. And so libraries are at a point and have continually been at a point that this outreach to the underserved users or the underserved patrons or underserved communities has always been critical. It's never been more critical than it is today.
When it comes to using, you know, providing digital technology and digital services, must be certain challenges to libraries. I would think part of it would be based on the fact that books are copyrighted, but books are also things that you own. You have a book you own. It's the library's book. They can lend it to whoever they want, et cetera, et cetera. They're responsible for its care and et cetera. But digital technology, they can provide a portal, but the things that they owned may be limited. You know, they would have a computer connected to the Internet, but they don't own the Internet. And they may lend ebooks, but you don't own ebooks except maybe public domain ones. You license them, and usually the agreement with the ebook publisher is that they still own it. They can take it away.
Yes, absolutely. Some ebook publishers limit the number of times a library can lend out a particular title to patrons. We do see libraries trying to address some of the digital device divide by, for instance, purchasing and lending e-readers like Nooks or Kindles. Still there are these issues with providing information and resources.
And there's a challenge there because e-readers don't – I would not count any e-readers as cheap yet, even the low-priced ones.
For me, no, not particularly. And actually navigating the interface, you know, trying to figure out how you load an ebook on your personal device is difficult. I think I'm fairly technically adept, but it's not something that was necessarily easy for me to learn to do.
I'm sure millennials across the country are just rolling their eyes right now. We have a librarian on the line, on line four, Kathy from Pontiac. Good morning. You're on the air on Focus.
Good morning.
And I'm
driving. Can you hear me?
Yeah, just try to keep talking towards the phone, please. But you're a librarian in Pontiac?
No, in Odell, a very small rural community. And this is kind of my retirement job. I'm fairly new. I've been there 2 years. And small communities, this is like our lifeblood in Odell, because there's very little else community-wise as a gathering place, and so it's really important for that. But we've seen a lot of changes. We struggle with the ebook situation, mostly get them through a consortium, because it's about five books. We would spend the money on five regular books to get one ebook, and then everyone would want it. And we saw some of the difficulties of checking those out for 2 weeks, and that's it.
Please go ahead.
Well, what I wanted to say is I come out of the social work field, and what we've seen in our area in Livingston County are DCFS, public aid, unemployment offices, all closing. People have to go as far as Bloomington. And so libraries are important to be an access point. People come in to use our computers, to go online and do things. And we feel that that's an important growth area that many libraries, I think, are expanding.
And we were talking earlier about one vision of the library as being a community center. Does the library in Odell get used as a meeting place where people come to do things?
Yes, we have a knitting and sewing group that comes in once a week. And, of course, we do kids programs and summer reading programs, which are really important, I think, to keep kids reading through the summer.
Okay, so there's definitely people in Odell. Well, this raises the other question, funding. Are you able to get the funding you need? Do you feel that people in Odell value their library enough to make sure it has a regular funding stream?
We're very fortunate in that we became a district library quite a while ago, which means we expand beyond 1,000 people in Odell. And therefore, our biggest asset the last year or two has been some windmills that have come in and given us quite a boost in our levy. So we're well-funded for a small library, but many small libraries are not.
Okay, well, it sounds like you're doing pretty well, but there are still a lot of challenges in Odell, which I note from the 2000 census is just barely over 1,000 people there.
Right, right.
Is your library just serving the village, or is it a district library with a larger area?
We serve another six townships around us, part or all of those townships.
Okay, so you have some people coming in from miles around.
Absolutely. And we are also on a bicycle trail across Illinois because we have a campground or a park that's used as a campground. So we get a lot of visitors, international, who are biking across the country. And they come in to find out from us where to go to eat and to use our internet to update their friends and family.
Well, you are definitely strategically located then.
Yeah, it's great. And it's really fun work. But I would say that I've worked in libraries much of my life. I do not have a degree. Small libraries can't afford someone with a library degree in many cases. But I hope that the library schools are working on the social aspect of what people need in order to get their services. Seniors, we teach seniors how to Skype. I mean, these are important things for people.
Well, Kathy, I wanted to thank you very much for calling into the program today.
Yeah, I'm on my way up there now. So.
Okay. Well, have a good day at the library.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, Kathy. Well, and that's a small-town library. A library in a small town perhaps can play really a different role than in a larger city.
I think that's true to some extent. I think libraries have always been the hub of the community. I think that's certainly true for the Urbana Public Library. That's been true from the earliest days of libraries, whether it's a large city, whether it's a small town. But I think it's especially true for the rural community libraries because there are many fewer places for people to go, for people to meet, for people to be able to access services.
At the same time, the idea of a library as a meeting place may have fueled some of the conflict at the Urbana Free Library. That concept doesn't have to necessarily involved in the controversial book culling practice that was done at the Urbana Free Library, but there was certainly a specific vision the library director is looking for, which is going to apparently involve a smaller footprint for the books.
It seems that way, that part of what is indicated by the strategic plan that's been developed and is now under sort of a reinvestigation is that the library needed more meeting space as well as just more place to sit and be social with one another. I think that there were questions raised at last week's special meeting of the Board of Trustees whether that really was something the library needed to be doing, that there perhaps were many other available spaces in the Urbana area for hosting meetings that were underutilized.
Did the trustees give any particular reply to that?
It was a public comment meeting only, so the trustees did not respond.
We have another caller with a question about the Urbana Free Library. Linda in Urbana, good morning. You're on Focus.
I'd like to know why those large numbers of culled books weren't offered to the patrons of the library since we bought them.
Well, we were told by a representative from the Friends of the Urbana Free Public Library that they were offered the books, that they were notified in November that there would be a large number of books that were going to be removed from the collection. And they were happy to sell them to the public, but that the weeding process moved on so slowly that it was going to, they were going to be offered at their spring book sale. Because the culling happened in June, the Friends of the Library indicated that they declined to sell them for several reasons, because of space, because it's their understanding that the general public isn't interested in books that are removed from the library, and thirdly, that people are mostly interested in particular kinds of books, mysteries, romances, gardening, pets, cookbooks.
Yeah, the indication that was given at the special meeting last week by the woman who spoke on behalf of the Friends of the Library was that a majority of the books that were removed in this most recent weeding would not have been deemed acceptable for sale by the Friends.
Even in a case where the weeding was such a substantial fraction of the collection, about a third of that part of the nonfiction collection.
Even in that case.
Why do the Friends have to sell them? Is there some way that they could have been sold at the circulation desk or something like that and see how many of them could be sold?
It's a question many people are asking.
Yeah. Now, I guess they're doing business with a company which specializes in, I think, reselling these books. I assume they're not just going to be pulped somewhere.
Unfortunately, Better World Books is an organization that I've purchased materials from, and that's where most of the books from Urbana Free that were weeded went. But Better World does pulp materials that they feel they can't sell. So it is possible that a significant number of the books that it received from Urbana Free have already been pulped or recycled.
And does Urbana get any of the money from the sale of the books?
My understanding from the Better World Books website is that they make a small donation to the library and that they pay for the shipping for the materials. But that's it.
It sounds sort of like junking your car.
Basically,
yes.
Donating it to charity, because Better World Books does support literacy projects. So the money that they make from selling the books that are donated to them does go back into literacy initiatives. But yes, it is rather like junking your car, giving it to a charity that will probably junk it.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Linda, thank you very much for calling. We just have a couple of minutes left on the program here, and I'm just wondering where things go from here, whether it's, you know, immediate questions like library funding or a particular practice. You can tell that both the two of you have concerns about the Urbana Free Library in particular. But what do you think is going to happen from here, and what sort of questions remain for the library board and the director and the patrons?
Well, I know that I sent a very long list of questions that the public asked to the Board of Trustees and to Mayor Pressing that were voiced at the emergency meeting of the Board of Trustees last week. Many of the questions relate to how did this happen? Why did this happen? People are curious about the chain of command, how strategic planning will go forward with their input.
So, I mean, there are dozens and dozens of questions outstanding at this point. We're in a holding pattern waiting for the library administration and the Board of Trustees to respond. There is the meeting on Tuesday night. I would say if you're an Urbana resident and you're interested in the future of the Urbana Free Library, please try to attend. It's at 6:30 Tuesday night in the library's auditorium. But I think that this for me has just emphasized the importance of being involved in local community, sharing your love for local institutions like the public library, and finding a way of providing support, whether it's moral or other kinds of support, for the community institutions you value.
And, of course, this is just one public library. There are public libraries throughout East Central Illinois. Not everybody actually is actually served by a public library, and they may find themselves either going without or paying, say, for instance, $60 a year to join the nearest public library. So it's a otherwise it'll usually be included in property taxes, and that's still real money, but it's just part of the tax burden that everybody bears.
Absolutely. So, for instance, in Urbana, the legal service area for the library has a smaller footprint than the Urbana School District. So there are a number of residents who would be served by the Urbana School District who are not within the library's legal service area. So they would have to pay a household fee in order to get service. And that's a different kind of barrier. There isn't another library that serves those folks. They are without unless they choose to pay directly for those services. And that's the case in many communities, that there are people who live within the community but are somehow outside of a particular agency's service area.
I'm afraid we'll have to break it off there. This is a continuing story as far as public libraries for East Central Illinois. Thanks to my guests, Catherine Labar and Carol Tilley, professors of library science at the University of Illinois. And this is Focus on WILL.